Hi there. Welcome to Semester 8, Episode 1 of the IBY's Just Admitted podcast, where former deans and directors of admission give expert insight into the complex college admissions landscape. This season, what are my chances? Data and decisions in college admissions. We're looking at statistics, data, and other kinds of evidence to help listeners decide what to consider and what to move past. I'm Tasha, your host. I'm an admissions counselor at IBYWISE, a former international admissions officer at USC, and former assistant director of international admissions at Boston University. And my guest today is Nat. Hi, Nat.
Hello, everyone. I'm excited to be back on. Thanks for having me, Tasha.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much for coming back on. So today on episode 3 of the season, we're going to be talking data versus anecdotal evidence. So we'll be starting by looking at the resources out there where students can find data and information about college admissions, but we'll also be considering anecdotal evidence, which is, of course, stories that you hear through the grapevine, either through your peers at school, through maybe even your college counselor, or by talking to students that maybe are already in college. And there's a lot of information out there and a lot of ways to maybe make comparisons. So that's why we wanted to have this episode, to kind of compare what does it look like when you're looking at the numbers versus specific individual instances of something. Okay, so why is it important to parse out the data from the anecdotal evidence?
Well, so that's a good question. And I love this topic. And we could spend days talking about this. But essentially, if you can get both data and anecdotal evidence, that you're always going to be in a better, you know, better position to make a decision, right? To have more than one. And we always talk about multiple snapshots whenever you're making a decision, whether it is to apply somewhere or to attend somewhere or any decision-making process, not even having to do with the college admissions process, but to have multiple snapshots is always a good thing. When we kind of talk a little bit more, I'd love to delve into, like, especially in college admissions, how data is, you have to take it with a grain of salt. You have to take it in context. As a research major, you know, in undergraduate, I was an exercise science major. I was taught to really always question the data, right? And whatever stat that you were receiving or learning about, you always had to question, you know, from a statistical analysis, like, okay, like, was it done with this? Was it double blind? Was it, you know, and so I've always had the default setting of questioning the data. And so that's one piece of it. And then with the anecdotal evidence, I mean, in the perfect world, right, you take anecdotal evidence and you try to match that and you try to substantiate that with real live data, right? And that's not always easy. And it takes more time. It's more time consuming. But if, you know, the goal is to be in a better position to make a decision about where you're going to apply or where you're going to attend, to have as much information, again, multiple snapshots, that's always a good thing.
Absolutely. And before continuing, I want to kind of make sure that folks listening understand what we mean by anecdotal evidence. So I did try to give kind of a definition of it just now, but I feel like you might do a more concise job. So what do we mean? Well, we know an anecdote is a story, right? An occurrence, right, of something that occurred, but yeah, then anecdotal evidence in the college admissions process, what do we mean by that?
So it's, you know, kind of things that come word of mouth, things come from not the first source, maybe it could be stories that you hear without knowing the full context. So for example, someone from your high school in the grade above you, right? Like, let's say you're a junior and a senior from last year got into Yale, right? And is going to Yale, but they didn't get into University of Michigan, right? And so, like, oh my gosh, like, should I not apply to Michigan, right? Someone got this test score and got in. Or oftentimes, you know, and I've worked at a school before and kids will come in and say, oh, Mr. Smittable, like, you know, so-and-so, they got this and they got into Wash U. And so a lot of times that anecdotal evidence, as it gets passed on from ear to ear or from family to family, you know, little details change. And one of the biggest, I think, sources of anecdotal evidence, and I think we are starting to move away from this, but it was a website called College Confidential. And even like many, many years ago, 20 years ago, When I was a young admissions officer or a younger admissions officer, I'm still young, right? So when I was a young admissions officer, I would scan the College Confidential boards, and you could really easily identify kids that were in your applicant pool that were posting and things like that. And it was very interesting because they'd do like, oh, like here, chance me, right? Here, I have really good extracurricular activities. I had a really strong essay. My letters of rec were really good. And so everyone has this, you know, self-qualification of how they did with, you know, submitting their application. And oftentimes, like I wouldn't necessarily agree with their own synopsis of their application, right? So that's anecdotal. That's the crowdsourcing of chance me, what are my chances? And, you know, even like doing a quick search today, I was looking at, you know, if you look at Cornell, and we'll talk about this more when we talk about data, but one of the first things that came up when I was searching for Cornell was, oh, I have a 1390. Should I apply test optional or submit my 1390? And then there was all these answers, and it was Quora, right, on a Google search. And the biggest piece of that puzzle was missing from every single answer, right? And then Quora, you know, does like, oh, here's the best answer. Here's the most popular answer. And the best piece of information, the most useful piece of information, was socioeconomic status. Because if you had a 1390 and you're the first in your family to attend college, or you're Pell eligible, that's a phenomenal score. Statistically speaking, you're in the 99th percentile for that educational background. And so to say like, oh no, like you shouldn't, like 75% of the kids will have higher than that, you shouldn't submit it. That's bad advice, right? And that's precisely why Dartmouth and some other schools are returning to require the test, because they found, you know, after the fact, that a lot of kids that should have submitted scores did not submit scores. So that's another podcast in itself, but that's an example of anecdotal crowdsourcing, trying to find information on the web, on the interwebs, and you know, it's very rarely the best information that you can get. Let's put it that way.
And funny you say, it's another podcast that's coming up on episode 5. We'll be discussing data and test optional policies, as well as, you know, of course, the recent news of these major universities that have reinstated test requirements. So thank you so much, Nat. I want to go back to something that you said about little details changing as stories get passed on. It kind of sounds like a game of telephone, right? Where,
right.
Yeah. So I feel like thinking of it in that way, of really in any instance, it's almost like it turns into gossip, where it might start out as accurate for that person in their particular context, and then potentially change. Whether something worked out for someone doesn't mean it's going to work out for you as a student, right? Because there's so many other factors going on.
Right. Yeah. And the other, you know, the other kind of anecdotal storytelling that I hear is, you know, someone will visit a certain college and then they'll come back and tell their friend like, oh, you know, I don't think you'll like it. It felt very artsy to me, or I think you will like it. It felt, you know, very so-and-so to me, and I think it would be a good fit. And I love it when, you know, when you have a friend that is thinking about you. But it's also, you know, it reminds me of like, if Jonah likes olives, it doesn't necessarily mean that he'll know that his friend will also like olives, right? Like, I think your perspective is, well, if you have close friends, like, sure, you could be helpful in that sense, but don't ever take that one anecdote or that one, oh, I think you'd like this, or I don't think you'd like it. Don't ever take that on its own, right? Let's try to find some data. Let's read, let's crowdsource other places. You know, here I am kind of talking about not crowdsourcing, but again, it comes back to multiple snapshots. And anytime you can get multiple snapshots, you're in a much better position to make a decision.
I really like that terminology of snapshot, right? Several different photographs and different angles to put together in an album to better understand like the totality, the 360 of a situation or of you as a student and your applicant profile. And I also wanted to go back to a term that you used in case anyone is not sure what it means, which was chance me. And that's actually going to be the topic of our next episode. So we can give maybe a little teaser here. What do you mean by chance me? And when students say that, what do they mean?
Yeah, they're just looking for their peers or so-called internet experts to give them a percentage on what's the likelihood of me being admitted or of me not being admitted. And, you know, that's at the heart of what we do as counselors at IVYs. We have a very good sense of if someone's going to be competitive or not. We can never, ever predict if someone's going to get in. We never guarantee that someone's going to get in. But with all of the experience that we have around the table, we do have a very, very good sense and a very accurate, valid sense of whether someone will be competitive or not. And oftentimes when you see chance meets, whether it's, you know, online or whether it's your friends sitting around, you know, in the student center, you're not getting all of the information that you need in order to really make a helpful prediction, right? And so it like goes back in point to that you know, anecdote that I shared about like, oh, 1390, should I apply test optional or submit my test score? And again, like none of the answers said, like, what's your socioeconomic background? That is such important context. And part of this is because colleges, they take data and they give you these data points without giving you the full context, right? So we as the folks applying, the families applying and trying to make decisions, we've been trained, you know, to kind of just take data points and try to use what we have, and we're not getting the full scope of that. And I'm happy to share more about that as well. So
yeah, thanks so much. I think that's all absolutely right. And like you said, a part of the snapshot mixed in with the anecdotal evidence needs to be data. And so we talked all about data last episode. We really dug in. Mm-hmm. So I just want to remind folks kind of some of the different kinds of data we discussed. So first and foremost, we of course talked about admit rates. We talked about overall college admissions rates for graduating students from a particular high school. So considering that there might be, you know, even more specific data out there for you to be aware of. The middle 50% SAT and ACT scores, as well as GPAs for admitted students, demographic pieces of data. So like Nat mentioned, socioeconomic status, averages, as well as other demographic characteristics, mm-hmm. in-state and out-of-state percentages. And that's especially really relevant at some of the more competitive in-state places, as well as, you know, the UCs. Finally, financial aid statistics, and of course, the rankings, which is kind of its own thing. Yeah. And so Nat, I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of chime in on any of these, you know, to sure. just kind of add to some of what we spoke about last episode, but also to, you know, contextualize how this data can fit into a conversation around anecdotal evidence.
Yeah, or how the data can kind of mislead some folks. So one example of, you know, of how a data point kind of really threw a lot of people off. When I was working at Skidmore College, that was the first college that I worked up for. I worked for a legendary dean of admissions who has just finally retired, and she's so missed in the profession, Mary Lou Bates. And I remember her taking her own kids to go visit some schools and sitting in group information sessions as a dean of admission, you know, and one of the best well-known deans of admissions in the business. And she was at one particular school, and in the group information session, they said, oh, 90% of our students are in the top 10% of the class. And then at that time, this was like the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, she like that was a very big metric within the U.S. News World Reports. Right. And so it was the percentage of the class that was in the top 10%. Right. And for this particular school, it was 90%. And that was actually pretty common for some of the top elite universities. And she raised her hand and asked a question. Well, what percentage of your applicant pool attended schools that actually gave a rank in class, right? And that percentage was a very, very low percentage. It was 40% of the applicant pool actually came from schools that actually presented a rank. And as we know, most private schools, independent schools, they don't have a rank, because let's say you have 100 kids in the class and you're number 11, well, then you're outside the top 10%. And so very, very few private schools would ever rank their students. A lot of public high schools will rank their students. And so they might have 400, 500, 700, 1100 kids in the class. And so if you're in the top 10%, that's a little bit different being from a larger public high school. But that's a perfect example of that particular school and schools like it. You know, the 25, 30 other schools that had a very similar statistic, you know, that might prevent some kids from applying because like, oh my God, I'm not in the top 10% of my class, or even worse, my school doesn't rank. So how will they do that? Right. And so if your school doesn't rank, then it's not going to hurt or help you. And then, you know, every private school counselor, you know, puts it in their letter if they are in the top 10%, right? So there's always ways around the data, but that anecdote I think comes to mind in terms of how data is misleading for a lot of families. And that was what I was saying about, you know, like colleges have trained us as consumers to kind of focus in on data, and that's made us, and because it is opaque in some ways, it's made us want to go out and try to find other sources of information to, you know, we're all coming from a good place, right? Everyone trying to go on to College Confidential or trying to get chance, I mean, they're all coming from the place of like, I want to know more, like, should I apply? Should I not apply? Right. So it's not, and there's no judgment there. And this is all stemming from just how little data, you know, colleges or the data points that the colleges decide to release to the public.
That's a really good point. Some colleges will release a lot of evidence and data, and some will be much more selective in what they publish. When you're looking at things like admit rates, that is typically just the admit rate for regular decision, or sometimes it's a combination of all different kinds. Yes. You don't necessarily know.
You don't necessarily know, right.
And then it also is almost never, correct me if I'm wrong, Nat, taking into account admit rates for non-fall starting programs.
Correct.
Exactly. And so even just right off the bat, admit rates can be misleading. Also, you know, obviously different kinds of programs are more competitive. Mm-hmm. But then finally, I think when it comes to thinking about data and anecdotal evidence, I would only add that you want to take everything with a grain of salt. Sure. When it comes down to it. And I think it's easy to easily conclude that anecdotal evidence is inherently less trustworthy or less true than hard numbers and data. And I'm curious what you would have to say to that, Nat. Would you agree with that?
So, I mean, if I had to answer yes or no, I would say, yeah, data is going to be more helpful. But there are instances where I can think of where anecdotal evidence can be helpful and maybe even more helpful. And that is in a really important part of this process. And that's financial aid packages. And so some of the words that we use, and when I say we, I'm now referring to colleges, and I don't work for a college anymore. And so some of the language that we use needs to be decoded, right? And so one of the terms that needs to be decoded the most is we meet 100% of financial need. Right. So there's a lot of colleges that say 100% of financial need, but what that doesn't really tell you is the composition of said financial aid package, right? Because if you have a $50,000 need based on the FAFSA, well, number one, that might not actually not be your need. You might need actually more than that, but the FAFSA just says the government thinks that, you know, you need $50,000, when in fact you might need more than that to attend comfortably. But the composition of your package, like, you could meet 100% of need in that $50,000 case with $50,000 of loan every single year. Or it could be maybe $45,000 of loan and maybe $5,000 of grant. So 100% of need is not, that's a term that is, it's so deceptive. And this is where anecdotal evidence can be helpful at times. But I also find that a lot of families, when they get a financial aid package, they're making a decision based on like, oh, okay, like that's a good package, and they might be saying that based on how much they have to pay. But I also want to know, if you have to pay so little, does it mean that you have a lot in loans afterwards, right? Like, because you don't want to graduate. You want to graduate with as little loans as possible. And so that sometimes anecdotal evidence, you know, when kids get their financial aid packages back, it can be, you know, that can be helpful. But also, again, like you said, Tasha, like a grain of salt is so, so important there. If they say like, oh, I got a great financial aid package and I don't have to pay anything and there's no loans and, you know, I got a full package with no loans, like, okay, that's really, really helpful anecdotal evidence. And the data might not support that. And there's a lot of cases where the data might not support that based on, you know, endowment per student or, you know, their tuition, you know, like their discount rate and things like that, that are kind of in the minutiae of financial aid packaging.
Yeah, thank you so much for that really specific example. And I definitely want to talk about some instances where the anecdotal evidence is just kind of hilariously off to the more astute observer.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking of, you know, the kind of case where you have an older student from your high school that is already in college, right? And of course, already got their acceptances. And so they have like the anecdote of how their admission cycle went, right? And then you're looking at where they got in and you're trying to look at the numbers of the rest of their profile, their GPA, their standardized test scores. You even might, if you're close with them, might even ask to see their essay. So a student might just be trying to compare every single part of their student profile while they're still in high school with the profile of an older peer that has already received all of their admissions and denials. But importantly,
yep,
that older peer might have applied to a different major or different program. That older peer might have different demographic characteristics or potentially, you know, family ties. Like there are a number of different factors that, a student might think they have all the pieces, but they don't actually. And I find that especially when it comes to comparing notes with someone that you know, I think that happens so often, because I think that there's this false sense of confidence that you're comparing like two common denominators, right? We went to the same high school, we took the same classes. Like it seems on the surface like a more fair comparison than one that you would make with a random person on the internet, right?
Right.
Or a more fair guess than you know, a chance me calculator on the internet might give you. And maybe in some ways it is, but in many other ways it might not be.
Right. No, I totally agree. And oftentimes, like the things that we don't see are some of the most important factors, right? Like how many kids applied that year? Did that person apply early decision? But you know, like we see it in high schools, the number of applicants at some schools can vary so much from year to year. And, you know, there were some schools when I was on the college side where we'd see like a ton of applications one year. And then because so many kids enrolled that following year, you would get so few because the kids didn't want to go where a lot of their high school went. And so you'd have to wait like two or three years before you saw like, you know, 15, 20 apps again. And then it would drop down to 5 the year. But then there's some schools where you get, you know, a consistent number every single year. But again, so many factors, as you said, Tasha, that you don't see that are so important into making that decision.
And as we start wrapping up, I'd love to know if you have any other kind of stories that come to mind when you think of just like a classic case of anecdotal evidence gone wrong or maybe even gone right, or the pairing of data and anecdotal evidence to really help the student on their path.
Yeah, you know, I love looking at the common data set. You know, it wasn't that long ago, and I still do it, where I used to have a group of colleagues, and Friday nights we would go and we would comb common data set, and we started making all of these things and, you know, all these spreadsheets to kind of keep track of things and try to make connections and correlations to financial aid packages and endowment per student and you know, annual giving and things like that. And but I think common data set can be a very helpful data, you know, piece of data. And the tough part is that oftentimes when you're looking at common data set for the schools that participate in it, because there are some schools that you don't have to participate in it, but oftentimes you're looking at data that is more than a year old. But it does tell you like, okay, what percentage of the class was taken in ED or what percentage, you know, how many kids were on the wait list and the average grant amount for financial aid, average grant amount, right? So this is kind of one of the data points where if you say like the average financial aid package is, you know, $45,000 of grant or something like that. Well, for a lot of institutions, especially small liberal arts colleges, it's because a lot of the kids that they were giving financial aid to were Pell eligible, right? And so it didn't mean that a middle class kid would get a $45,000 package. And I still think, you know, right now, the way that, you know, our process is working out, it's, you know, the wealthy kids of very affluent families are faring well, and then students that are, you know, in Pell eligible or in the lower in the socioeconomic, you know, strata, those students are hopefully also continuing to get not only the opportunity, but support once they get there. But it's still very hard for middle-class families, you know, either to afford college or to get, you know, to get into a place, you know, because they might not get financial aid and they need financial aid to attend comfortably. So I know I digressed a little bit. So back to your question about anecdotal evidence. I mean, I think we're all trying to come from a really good spot, you know, and trying to help each other and trying to use all the data that we can get. But oftentimes anecdotal evidence is, it can be stuff that you want to hear. And sometimes the data is the stuff that you need to hear and need to see. And if you can use those two things together, I think you're always going to be in a better spot, you know, to make a decision.
And as a counselor, when you're counseling your students, do you find that you ever use anecdotal evidence to kind of support a recommendation or give students like confidence or discouragement, even if they need it, for any of your recommendations?
Yeah, you know, I would try to use my own experience. I would use the experience of some of my students that have gone by, that have gone through. I also love trying to connect, especially when I was at, you know, a school-based counselor, I love trying to connect kids that are already on campus to students that are thinking about applying and making sure that they go and they get to kick the tires and spend a night if possible. It used to be, you know, not so long ago, but I guess it feels certainly pre-pandemic, where a lot of schools had like overnight programs where you could go and spend the night. And that's much more difficult to find now. And now you sometimes find them in yield programs, like when you've been accepted. But I always try to, you know, like put students in a position where they can gather their own anecdotal evidence, right? They can gather their own data points. Maybe it's not hard numbers, but it's a feeling, it's the vibe on campus. It's, and that is, you know, that's a huge privilege to be able to experience before you make a decision. But that is often, if we're considering that, you know, that's kind of both. It's anecdotal and data-based, right? Because you're building this experience, but you're also, that's a data point in order to make a decision.
And you make a really good point, a really important distinction here, I think, which is between evidence for likelihood of admission versus evidence for fit and potential, you know, success upon attending, right? So the kind of anecdotal evidence that you just gave as an example is, you know, evidence of what a college or university is like and a student's feeling, right? Kind of innate vibe that they get as a visitor, or, you know, learning more about those academic programs, going and speaking to professors, shadowing a class, et cetera. Right. So that's more evidence for, you know, whether or not a school makes sense to a student and that, you know, this, whether the student is a good fit and the university is a good fit, rather than looking at probability of admission. And I think that's important to think about, is that that's something that students should be thinking about, you know, really just as much, because ultimately they should really only be applying to places where they feel, you know, quite confident that they'll be able to pursue what they want to pursue and be happy, and not to not exclusively to places that, you know, are most competitive, or they think they're going to get in, or they want to prove that they can get in.
I know. Right. Yeah. There's this old saying, and Tasha, I'm so glad that you were ending on this, this saying is like, college is a match to be made, not a prize to be won. Right. And that is so true.
I've never heard that.
Oh, really? Oh,
one would think I would have heard that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I'll start using it.
You know, it's like, it was a very ubiquitous quote back in, I guess, the early 2000s. There's been, you know, I've heard it being credited to a couple of different people, but one was a NACAC president, one, I think Lauren Pope is the author of The Colleges That Changed Lives. Like, that was a very big quote in that whole series back in the early 2000s. But the prevailing center of gravity, especially in affluent communities, because I can't speak for, you know, the entire nation, but certainly in communities where, you know, we're talking about college and attendance, the center of gravity is one where it's seen as like, oh, if you get into a reach school, like that's better. Like that's better. And that should be flipped around, you know, for the kids that find their fit. And and it might be a likely school or it might be a target school. There's just as much validity and success in that. And I would love for that to be the center of gravity, not to just, you know, reach and like, oh my God, I have to, that has to be my first choice because it's my reach. It's okay if your first choice school is a likely school or a target school. That's totally, totally fine. It doesn't mean it has no bearing on the experience that you will have other than maybe what you have in your head, right? So let's try to change that. I know that's going to be an uphill battle to try to change that culture, but it's worth saying out loud. So I'm glad that you brought that up, Tasha.
Yeah, thank you so much for adding so much value to what I said. And now I have a new aphorism to add to my, I don't really have a bucket of aphorisms, but I aspire to. So with that, Nat, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Tasha.
Of course. So that just about wraps up this episode of Just Admit It. Look out for a new episode every other week throughout the spring and stay tuned for our next episode, episode 4. What are my chances? Statistics, probability, and like I said, chance me calculators. In the meantime, you can catch up on all of our previous episodes by visiting our podcast page and be sure to bookmark our knowledge base for additional help with navigating the complex and competitive admissions process. If there are any topics you'd like us to cover in the next semester, please email us at podcast@ivywise.com. And don't forget to follow us on socials for more resources on the higher ed landscape. You can find us at @followivywise. From IvyWise, I'm your host, Tasha, and this has been Just Admit It. See you next time.